You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
This month, besides being the season of Thanksgiving, here at KB we celebrate Native American heritage.
Born to
Tune
challenge.
In throughout the rest of the month for special programming hosted and produced by Native American creators, as well as programming highlighting Native American, First Nation, Indigenous, and Aboriginal cultures here on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
Listen to Black Book Talk at KBOO FM every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon. Co-hosts OB Hill, Patricia Welch, and Emma Jackson Ford discuss African American authors and books. That's Black Book Talk every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon on KBOO FM.
Born from challenge with a vision for future solutions, we are PDX Progressive Talk Radio, and we're talking to the leaders of government, nonprofits, and businesses seeking answers and having some success. Listen to us live at 7 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of each and every month as we seek to grow, learn, and progress. We are PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Oh. Hi. Okay, sorry. Apparently we had a little dead air there. I thought I turned the mic on and I didn't. So, you missed the whole thing, which is great because we're going to start over. So I wanted to say good evening and thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to PDX Progressive Talk Radio. I'm Sherry Morish, your host for this evening. And if you are listening to us today, Wednesday, September 22nd, tomorrow is Thanksgiving, and we are simply thankful to be here. Moses Ross is our host. He's running for Portland City Council District 4. So he's had to take a sabbatical from the station or from the show and until the election is done. And we hope that he actually takes that seat in District 4. We're wishing him luck in his race. And he has some great ideas for Portland. And did you know that Moses is a veteran in the Portland political community? So tonight, I want to take this opportunity to talk about something that is super close to my heart. That subject is gun violence. On April 20th, 1999, I was shocked to see two students walk into Columbine High School and kill 12 of their classmates. I was a young adult with three children at the time, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing and hearing on the news. And later, my kids, when they were in school, they would be involved in lockdowns due to, you know, scares. I mean, we have a whole different way of organizing in class now. And today, we have police sitting perched at all of our schools, turning them essentially into small prisons. The thought of your child not coming home after school is daunting as a parent. And any of you who are parents out there know that feeling, especially if you have children in school today. So gun safety in Oregon is still very much an issue. And if you remember right, back in 2022, 50.71% of us voters in Oregon passed Measure 114. Well, if you haven't heard, today, Harney County Judge, the Honorable Robert S. Rasko, I'm pretty sure I slaughtered his name, and I apologize for that. I've practiced his name all day, and I still don't quite get it. He has just ignored the will of voters in Oregon State. I'll recall back in 2022, we voted to have regulations regarding gun laws in the state of Oregon, and he has chosen to completely subvert our wishes by permanently blocking implementation of Measure 114. The Oregon Gun Safety Alliance addressed this via email today, and I quote, Harney County Circuit Court Judge Robert S. Rasko today ruled in favor of the national gun lobby, leaving our communities vulnerable to preventable gun violence. Measure 114 was brought to the ballot by concerned community members. It was It's what Oregonians want and deserve to keep their families and neighborhoods safe. Measure 114 passed by 50.71% in November of 2022. The majority of the state wants this measure on the books. Measure 114 offers stricter gun laws that include smaller capacity magazines, while also requiring anyone who wants to purchase a firearm to take a safety class, pass a test, and acquire a registration to own a gun, the registration for the gun. It would also have required gun owners to pass a background check. My goodness, the levity, the things that we are making these poor people do when they don't want to hold their own accountable. I can't believe it. The horror that we're putting these poor law-abiding gun owners through. Some say it passed by a slim margin. However, it passed with enough votes to avoid a recount. So I think that's significant. Not only has this judge single-handedly made Oregonians less safe, he's illustrated that adults in his district do not care about a child's right to safety in schools, the movies, going shopping, or going to church. This one person by himself has left an entire state less safe and more anxious than it was before the decision. I don't know how people like this sleep at night. This measure and its passage were so important to young people. For instance, Juniper Rook, who in 2022 told OPB's Lillian Hughes, quote, "It's just so surreal to know that Oregon is one of the states that's taking a first big step to creating a safer place for all people." That was a quote by Rook. The article by Lillian Hughes goes on to say, quote, "The high school student who lives in Redmond said she and many of her friends can feel anxious about going to school because shootings have become so common. She said she started advocating for stricter gun laws when 17 students were killed at Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida. Rook was 12 at the time. A 12-year-old is seeing high school students being shot and killed, and that moves her at 12 years old to advocate for stricter gun laws." She is currently a high school student. Well, this was a couple years ago. She was a high school student. Juniper goes on to say, "I feel like even adults who aren't parents kind of have a responsibility to keep kids my age safe. And it's really not happening until now." It was super disappointing. That poor girl, she's probably extremely disappointed now. My heart actually breaks for her and her parents and every other parent and parents who have lost children to gun violence, who have, I mean, even here in Oregon, down in Roseburg, And we've had shootings at schools all over the place. And there's shootings in grocery stores, in churches, on the side of the street. Okay? I mean, what does it take? I don't understand. It's like doctors nowadays. We'll get off on another tangent later about doctors. And it's not the doctor's fault. It's insurance companies pretending to be doctors that and the way corporate America has condensed our time. The most important thing we have in our life is our health. And corporations have decided that takes 15 minutes to resolve any issue. Anyway, so I am going to go on and tell you what OPB's Think Out Loud David Miller and OPB's reporter Jonathan Levinson explained about the events of today with the decision by the judge in Harney County.
This is Think Out Loud on OPB. I'm Dave Miller. Yesterday, a Harney County Circuit Court judge ruled that Measure 114 violates Oregon's state constitution. Oregon voters approved the law last year to regulate firearms. Measure 114 would ban future purchases of magazines that can carry more than 10 rounds of ammunition. It would also require people to get a permit before they could buy a firearm. To get a permit, applicants would have to complete a safety class and pass a federal background check. I'm saying would because multiple court challenges have prevented the law from going into effect. Earlier this year, a federal judge ruled that Measure 114 does not violate the U.S. Constitution, but that decision has been appealed to the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. OPB reporter Jonathan Levinson joins us to talk about all of this. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So a lot of this state trial that led to the ruling we just got yesterday, it focused on the history of firearms in Oregon around the time that Oregon was founded in 1859. Why?
Yeah, so much 1800s era firearms history. We heard testimony from a museum curator, a Revolutionary War era historian, an anthropologist, and they were focusing on firearms in common use around 1859, the year the Constitution was passed, because the state constitution protects those firearms, or firearms that are a clear modern day equivalent. So to determine if a firearm is protected today, the judge in the case, Robert Ratio, had to understand what existed in the 1800s.
What kind of evidence did the two sides put forward?
Well, because Measure 114 bans magazines holding over 10 rounds of ammunition, a lot of the testimony focused on whether or not repeating firearms, those firearms capable of firing multiple rounds without reloading, whether or not those were in common use in the 1850s. And so for the plaintiffs, the two people who are challenging the law's constitutionality, they called a woman named Ashley Lubinsky. She's a former curator at the Cody Firearms Museum in Wyoming. She testified that there were many firearms at the time capable of firing multiple rounds. And she said that there were models that existed that held over 10 rounds. But Oregon Department of Justice attorneys who are defending the measure, they later asked her how common those were in the U.S. at the time. And she conceded that they were actually very rare. For their side, the DOJ attorneys relied on several historical experts. Brian DeLay from UC Berkeley, he's a historian there. He said that these kinds of firearms were not only vanishingly rare at the time, but that the advent of repeating technology later in the 18th century was such a rupture, he found it very difficult to imagine that anyone could have predicted the technology's wide-scale adoption.
How convincing did the judge find these arguments?
Well, he found that the measure was unconstitutional, so
there we are.
Yeah, he found Lubinsky's testimony convincing, which is maybe surprising, since this summer Lubinsky also testified in the federal trial testing Measure 114's legality under the U.S. Constitution, and the judge in that case found that she lacked credibility. U.S. District Judge Karen Immergut wrote in her ruling this summer that Lubinsky not only lacked training as a historian, but that her personal ties to the firearms industry undermined her neutrality as an expert. Ratio simply disagreed with the Lay's analysis and said that the framers were certain to have known about the technological advancements underway. And he had some tense exchanges during the trial. In particular, he questioned the scientific basis for some of the conclusions reached by a Tufts University epidemiologist, Dr. Michael Siegel. Siegel testified about his research showing how casualties dramatically increase when high-capacity magazines are used. And Judge Ratio basically brushed aside his testimony. He wrote that the total number of people killed in mass shootings is, quote, staggeringly low in comparison to the media's sensationalized coverage of the events. And Ratio said that Siegel's testimony simply wasn't scientific under Oregon's evidence laws.
You know, a lot of the same ground was tread in the arguments in front of that federal judge, Karen Immergut, that you just mentioned, over the summer. How was her reading of the same evidence different from Judge Ratio's?
Yeah, I mean, first, the federal trial was pretty significant. This was the first full trial since the U.S. Supreme Court's 2021 Bruin decision. That decision changed a lot about gun laws in the country. It said that public interest, such as enhancing public safety, can't be a consideration when deciding a law's constitutionality. And it also said that firearms regulations must be, quote, consistent with this nation's historical tradition of firearms regulations. So current laws must have precedent from the 18th century. And Imrigut's 122-page ruling laid out that historical record in just painstaking detail. Unlike Ratio, who said that magazines are integral parts of a firearm and necessary for them to function, Imrigut actually said that in the 18th century, magazine referred to an ammunition depot. And she said that the cartridge boxes, which held individual rounds, were actually called accoutrements and not considered arms. So today's magazines are not protected, she said. She also agreed that there is a historical precedent for regulating weapons. And historically, those regulations were tailored to the specific features that made the weapons most dangerous. For example, high-capacity magazines. Ratio, on the other hand, wrote that Measure 114 burdens Oregonians who want to protect themselves, and he said the provisions will actually make Oregonians less safe.
It was striking that he also, responding to some county sheriffs from Eastern Oregon who testified, he essentially talked about the enormous land areas in Eastern Oregon and the limits of law enforcement's ability to respond quickly, really talking, showing the rural-urban split in terms of approaches to gun laws. The federal case is currently appealed to the Ninth Circuit, as I mentioned, is likely or could very well go to the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court. Meanwhile, this state case is going to be appealed as well. What's the next step for this case?
Oregon Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum has already said that the state will appeal the decision. That means it is headed to the Oregon Court of Appeals.
And what about the time frame here? We now have these two different cases that are both going to be going to various levels of appellate courts. Do you have any sense for the timing?
As we have seen, courts move very slowly. It's probably going to be a while. For now, all of Measure 114's provisions are blocked from taking effect.
Jonathan, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Jonathan Levinson is an OPB reporter. He joined us to talk about the ruling yesterday from a judge in Harney County. He said that Measure 114, that's Oregon's voter-passed gun control law, violates the state constitution. It is going to be appealed along with the federal case that went in the other direction, which is already appealed. There are, as a reminder, a lot of ways you can get in touch with us if you have comments about what we've done or questions or suggestions for what we should cover. You can email us. We are thinkoutloud@opb.org. You can always leave us a voicemail. Our number is 503-293-1983. At the end of the show, we're actually going to hear some of your great voicemails that came in about our inability sometimes to replicate recipes from people we have lost. Also, during our live show.
So there you have it. Think Out Loud's David Miller and OPB reporter Jonathan Levinston offering some insights into where we are with this struggle in Oregon State. I took some time to look up what the actual Oregon Constitution says about firearms and the right to bear arms in Oregon. Article 1, Section 27 states, right to bear arms, military subordinate to civilian power, civil power. The people shall have the right to bear arms for the defense of themselves and the state, but the military shall be kept in strict subordination to the civil power. Nowhere in this passage does it state that civil power includes any type of gun, any kind of ammunition, under any circumstance. I believe we, the people, should stand up and demand that this case be taken to the Supreme Court. And at some point, that's going to have to happen. However, I will caveat that because our current Supreme Court is seriously sort of dysfunctional, but right wing, right? So these are the people who scoff at children dying in school, scoff at people dying at a concert in Las Vegas, scoffed. They could care less. You even heard it in the ruling by that judge. It's so insignificant as to not impact the ability for quote unquote responsible or law. They, and that's funny too, law abiding gun owners from the party of personal accountability. That it just, it's, I'm just awestruck by all of it. It's a little bit much to take in all at once. Think about this. In the grand scheme of things, I believe that asking or regulating magazines on guns to have fewer than 10 shot or 10 bullets in it is not impeding somebody from the ability of buying a gun. Crazy. I mean, people who have instances of failure in thought or misrepresentation of themselves and how they see the world should not impact the rest of us by any stretch of the imagination. I'm going to play a Midway song at the moment just to kind of recalibrate my brain, and I'll be right back. In a minute.
I chose Wix for my business because of its massive scope for function.
Come on. I had it, so it didn't.
When I was young, it seemed that life was so wonderful. A miracle. Oh, it was beautiful, magical. And all the birds in the trees, they be singing so happily. Oh, joyfully, oh, playfully.
Good evening. We are back. Love Supertramp. I almost wanted to play Alice's Restaurant. That's Thanksgiving song.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have Althea here. She is Althea Billings. She's our KBOO news director and super big fan I am of her. And so I have a few minutes to hang out with Althea, so I have questions I have to ask. She's really hard to pin down. So
I feel like that. I don't think of myself that way, but I'm glad to be here,
Sherry.
She's
kind of like back and forth all the time.
I do tend to jog around.
You do?
I don't. Walking, I don't even know that I believe this, but I act like I believe it. Walking is a waste of time. At least in the office. And then I'm taking these sharp corners, almost bowling people over. It's a song for another
time. I'm usually going 100 miles an hour, and yeah. She's faster than me. So, Althea, I have some questions for her, and I'm hoping that these are questions you might have had for Althea. Because you hear her on the radio every Friday at 8 a.m. on The Gap, and she's fabulous. So how...
Can't do it without our fabulous board op. Sherry gets us on the air. Anyway, go ahead.
Thanks to the chance. So, Althea, first thing I want to know is, how did you get interested in journalism? What sparked that?
It started when I was in probably in ninth grade. I think ninth grade is kind of a time when you survey yourself and you look around and you say, you know, what am I good at? What are my talents? How do I stack up in the world? And at that point in time, I felt that I was very good at writing. And I, for a point in time, was like, oh, maybe I'll be an author. Got off of that pretty quick. I was like, there's no money in that. I'll never make any money that way. But journalism, you can get paid to write. That's a job that people have. And this, you know, this wasn't that long ago. Like, the journalism industry wasn't thriving at that point in time. But that's how I got involved in it, is I started at my high school paper, followed it through college, and ended up at KBOO. And now I'm like, as much as it was sort of, how do I, you know, do writing for a job, I'm very much given over to the ethos of it and the importance and the Fourth Estate and blah, blah, blah.
And you are actually super superior at what you do.
Thank you.
And just some insight. I volunteer on the news team now and then, and she has taught me a tremendous amount, and she's kind of picky.
So. Am I?
And wait, that's
picky,
okay.
Picky
that's
in
okay.
What way?
What brought you to KBOO?
I got extremely, extremely lucky. When I graduated from Lewis and Clark College in 2019, a few months later, I ended up getting hired at KBOO in a true stroke of luck, because I didn't have any radio experience at that point in time. I had only done print stuff, obviously, with volunteers. So I think that helped. And I am very grateful to KBOO to have built my audio and my radio skills. But even if that hadn't happened, even if I hadn't gotten the job, I actually believe in my heart that I would have ended up here somehow.
Yeah, you're a perfect fit.
I think I would have found my way here in one form or another.
What misconceptions might someone have about the role of a news director, like your job details?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of what I do is the day-to-day of getting the KBOO evening news on air. So that's from 5 to 6 on weekdays. So some of it is, or a decent amount, is the nitty-gritty of, we have to have stories, we have to have stuff written, we have to have audio, we have to have all of like the nuts and bolts of what goes into a newscast. And then on top of that, I train people, because it is a volunteer newscast that invites anybody who would like to be a part of it to be a part of it. So a lot of my job is also training people and helping people skill build to be a part of that. And that is kind of a unique thing in terms of like the term, or like the title news director. I do a lot of training and thinking about how do I communicate to people and mold them in such a way that they can, you know, learn about journalism and ethics, and specifically how do we adapt these things for radio, and so that you as the listener understand what we're talking about. And there's a lot of thinking that goes into that. It's, you know, the ums and the ahs. That's something I tell people about. The vocal tone, all of these things. Yeah.
That's fabulous. What is your favorite memory of a story that you've covered?
Favorite memory of a story that I've covered. Well, I have like pet stories, and then I have stories where just by the virtue of having been at KBOO and been the news director that I'm so just astonished that I even know about. This was a few years ago now, but there was a story that I covered about controversy in the Newport pool of the Willamette River. And it had to do with this change in regulation that people were pushing through about the weight and like type of boat that you could use to recreate on that part of the river. And, you know, at first glance, that seems quite dry. Why are we arguing about, you know, is 2,000 pounds too much, too low, whatever, what have you? But it turns out it's one of the few places in this area where you can do tow sports. So like pulling people on an inner tube or anything like that. And so it's very popular for that reason. But along the river, it had developed into this wealthier community. And so it was really like a push and a pull between folks who were out on boats, maybe playing music more at a decibel level that people on the shore didn't like. And so it was sort of this roundabout way to try to restrict people from doing tow sports or from being loud or enjoying that part of the river. And so it was like a little bit of a class friction kind of a thing. And it was just so fascinating because at first glance, that's not, you know, necessarily what it looked like. And, you know, as somebody who hadn't had the opportunity to like be in that area or know that that's what it was really about, you know, it's easy enough to see that like, oh, the water district wants to push through this thing about restricting the size of boats. Yeah, that's fine. That probably doesn't mean anything, you know?
Yeah. And it's interesting how much you find out when you delve into a story that seems nonchalant.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I didn't realize that.
And that's, you know, this is what I tell people, Sherry. I say there's stories everywhere.
There are. So do you have any that are your favorite?
My favorite stories, like city government is definitely a pet issue of mine. You are a part of my other show, so you know that I talk everybody's ear off about it, but back in 2019, when I had started working at KBOO, I was across the street at a coffee shop reading the Portland Mercury, back when it was in print. Oh, Portland Mercury print, we miss you. And there was an article from Alex Zielinski talking about neighborhood associations and really breaking down all of the politics of neighborhood associations, especially as they were in 2019, but still relevant to today. And that was kind of my onboard into city council, government structure,
nice.
All of the peculiarities of the Portland system. So I was really, you know, fascinated by the charter change that campaign was able to pass. And now, of course, watching some of those changes actually happen is really fascinating. It's really exciting. We're forging a new frontier here in Portland.
We are, which I get a bonus question.
Okay.
You're watching some of the culmination of the elections coming up for the different districts.
Yeah.
Do you have any, like, thoughts about what you're seeing so far?
In Portland?
Yes.
Oh, it's chaos. And it's going to be chaos for a couple years. And I think this is now, you know, putting on me moralizing, telling you what to do. Everybody needs to have a little bit of patience. I think that we have something of a short memory. I think you see that in a few different issues. The way the normal stack up of power players is we're not seeing that yet. You know, they don't know how it's going to play out. They don't have, you know, any kind of playbook to really even go off of because it's a whole new thing. It's a whole new landscape. And I think that we're going to see some really interesting people run, some really interesting people make it onto council, some really interesting policy making and ideas as a result of that, which I believe was the intention of the measure, was to kind of shake those things up. But it's going to be a lot to digest. I don't even know if it's possible for like a person whose job isn't to read the news all day. Like, I don't even know if it would be worth bothering knowing who the other candidates in other districts are, because I think the latest number I saw was like 36 candidates are declared now. And
yeah,
I mean, I think some maybe heavier hitters are going to wait until it's a little further in. So I don't think we've seen the top, like the highest amount of those people that we will.
But think about how huge this is with honest elections, trying to get IP9 on the ballot in November of 2024 for campaign finance reform. They've already implemented it in Multnomah County and in the city of Portland. This is our first real opportunity to see it in action.
Yeah. Yeah, and campaign finance is one of those issues that is like tied into every other problem that we have.
It is. Thank you.
And so to address that one, and because look, everything is complex, everything's tied to each other. There's not one magic pill that changes everything. But coming at it from different angles, with charter change, with expanding the council, with making something of an approximation of proportionate representation, such as we have, are all sort of trying to target at the issue, which is Portland, its government, how do we represent people, how do we serve people?
Yes. And we have there are so many other questions I could ask you. But I've taken up some of your time. And so everybody who's listening, Althea said that she could stick around for questions if you want to call. And then I want to know what you think about this judge's call on the gun safety measure, yeah. Measure 114. So you're welcome to call. The phone number is 503-231-8187. And let us know what your thoughts are on this. Also, you can call and tell us what you're thankful for. And that's one I forgot is do you have any thankful shout-outs?
Thankful shout-outs. Well, I'm very thankful to, we're in KBOO right now, I'm very thankful to all of the volunteers and programmers that keep us going. People who volunteer their time in the newsroom to help keep their fellow citizen informed, not being paid to do so, but from the goodness and the interest in their own heart. I'm very thankful to all the volunteers.
That's I am as well. Speaking of which, we are in our winter.
Not yet.
Not yet?
Not yet. We got a couple more weeks.
Oh, I thought we were. Oh, okay.
Hold on to your seats, people. It's coming.
We've got some things coming up, but I am super thankful for you, for all of the staff here who keep everything going for us. We've had some rough times recently, but I think we're getting over the hump here, and it's we get to be here.
Yeah.
We get to be on the air. Mm-hmm. And the kids were in here earlier, and
Oh, it was so fantastic.
I love watching them.
Yeah. It's been awesome to see the Youth Collective folks get more comfortable and everything and more creative. And
can you tell us about the Youth Collective anybody is interested in getting their kids involved?
So it's for folks under the age of 21. If you are interested in learning about radio, you could consider becoming a part of a Youth Collective, or maybe ask if there's a kid in your life that might want to be part of the Youth Collective. They meet every Wednesday from 5:30 to 7:30. It's a place where you learn radio skills, and every month, I believe it's the fourth Wednesday at 6, it's when their show The Underground is on, and every month there's a different theme. They can play music. They can, as there were a lot of today, make fake ads for stuff, parody TV if they want to. So there's a lot of creativity that goes into it, and meeting new people and collaborating and having fun on the radio.
Yeah, I've watched them in the short time we've had it going again.
Yeah,
and they're getting really good.
Yes, they totally are. Getting more uncomfortable on the board and speaking on mic. And, you know, it's just it's something that I wish that I had when I was that age, you know, just to speak in your mind, you know, following your creativity and getting to have other people respond to you is really cool.
I think that's a good idea for maybe middle school and high schools.
Yeah.
Have little radio stations.
There are some of them. Yeah.
Do they?
Benson Polytechnic. Shout out KBPS.
Nice.
Their student hour plays in the AM hours, I think once a month or something.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
Give kids something to do.
Yeah. They're coming in here and they're, tell you what, they're doing stuff. If you email youth@kboo.org or volunteer@kboo.org, if you're a youth in your life, might want to come do radio with us.
What should we be looking for this week as things to do or things in the news that have sparked your interest?
I mean, the teacher strike. Oh shoot! I meant to see what the what was the teacher strike? They said they were going to say something at 6.
Okay. Oh no!
I'm Googling. I'll see what happens. It doesn't seem like it's been resolved yet. I mean, obviously that's a big one. The Harney County thing. I was counting down. I mean, they said that they would have it by today. I'm not too surprised. I'm disheartened and a little bit curious as to why it's just, we knew that this was going to happen, so why do we have to wait a whole year for it?
Right.
But, you know, process. judicial system.
It's the same argument, though, and I'm sorry, I'm going to go on a little tangent. It's the same argument. I have been arguing gun safety for over 10 years. Mm-hmm. And when I was arguing it in rural Kitsap County up in Washington, you get the same argument. It's like the Republicans and the right don't know how to change up their thought processes. Mm-hmm. They get stuck in this little narrow vision, and that's where they stay. Oh, you're just making it harder for law-abiding gun owners to be able to express their Second Amendment rights. Where in the Second Amendment does it say that you can have a gun that can kill 15 people in less than a minute?
Right.
Right? It doesn't. There's nothing in there that offers you the right to that opportunity.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the Oregon State Constitution that offers you the right. You do not have a written right to an AR-15.
Right.
You just do not.
Mm-hmm.
So we can make regulations. There's regulations on free speech, as you are well aware.
Mm.
I can preach free speech and freedom of expression and blah, blah, blah all day long.
Mm-hmm.
I still can't say fire in a movie theater.
Yeah, you can't.
I still can't. There's a lot of things that I can't do. I can't make bomb threats.
Right.
I can't.
That's
not
protected speech.
It's not protected speech.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here.
Well,
but,
sure.
You know, I don't know of any Republicans that might listen to us.
Well, you know, I mean, I think that there's a lot of, I think, varying viewpoints. I think that the going back to the same line every time is kind of when it's just we clearly have a crisis. And, you know, I saw that Judge Ratio was saying that, like, mass shootings are overblown. Or overemphasized, and that statistically, compared to the amount of gun owners who don't do a mass shooting, that it's statistically insignificant. Which I don't have the numbers in front of me to debate that per se. But what we don't talk about is the amount of gun violence that is domestic violence, that is suicides, that are lives that would be here today if access to guns wasn't as free as it currently is. And just because those are not lives necessarily lost in a fantastical fashion or that make national news doesn't mean that it's not part of a crisis. You know, it's exactly. More invisible in that way.
Exactly. Well, and not to mention the fact we have almost 400,000 guns on the streets in the United States and 300,000 people.
Yeah.
And that's another huge issue.
Yeah.
And where does it stop?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like the homeless count. 600,000 homeless people in the land of plenty.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that okay?
Yeah. I mean, you can take it back to the Onion headline and every time, and they always do, you know?
Yeah.
Nothing to be done, says the nation, the only nation in the world where this happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, I've heard a lot of commentators speak about mental illness in other nations,
yeah,
about threats of violence in other nations, about people in the outback, you know, in other nations, and they don't have these problems.
Right. Right. I mean, you know, it's not to diminish the importance of, you know, mental health and addressing people's needs, but those don't get addressed if there's a gun in your hands, you know?
I honestly
you don't get a chance. It's harm reduction in a sense.
I honestly think for the amount that we pay in taxes on an annual basis and the amount that corporations do not, one, they have no say, that means the NRA can take a leap. And two,
yeah,
our money should not be $869 billion being set aside to kill people in other nations.
Mm. Did you see the thing about the Pentagon audit? They failed their sixth audit in a row.
No, I missed that.
Billions. We don't know where they are.
Well, that's been systemic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But even, it's still bad.
Even in the Iraq conflict, they lost trillions of
dollars. Where does it go?
Pallets of money.
Which is wild. when you think about like auditing structures, I don't know, I just immediately go to the joint office, that headline from recently where they held up, you know, big funds to a social service program because there was like a $25 discrepancy. Not so with the Pentagon, folks.
No. No, and
you can lose billions and not lose your job, I guess.
It's incredible.
Anybody who's worked a service job and had to like count their till at the end, and like if you're more than, I mean, some places are more lenient than others. If you're more than $10 off, oh my God.
Right. You know? Right. The amount of corruption and dysfunction in this nation has got to change. And I don't know, how do we get there? Do we start, I mean, protesting in the streets? Okay. Every city in the United States on the same day, go and protest.
Sounds like you're talking about a general strike, Sherry. Sounds like it. Sounds like it to me.
Well, why not?
Well, we got to do something. And something is better than nothing.
That's a fact.
It's a little musical sting.
Yeah.
That's how I know I'm right, is when the music comes in.
Exactly. Something is better than nothing, but what is that something? Because, well, you know, I was thinking about this, and stories have been told recently across news broadcasts that a lot of Americans are using credit cards to supplement their income and their current lifestyles. When will they stop being able to pay those credit card bills and buy food and pay electric and pay their mortgage? Mm-hmm. At some point, and some people on, young people your age on TikTok are talking about this. You do not even understand how bad the situation actually is.
Yeah.
Yes, we have record low unemployment. Yes, we have record high jobs in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. Yes, the stock market is doing fine. All of the normal indicators we would use to substantiate the notion that we have a thriving, healthy economy.
Yeah.
We have a crisis in student loan debt, in credit card debt, in housing.
Yeah.
And I mean, when the average house today is $469,000, that is the median cost of a house. Who?
With what money?
Right. Yeah. Right. With what money? Where? With interest rates hitting, you know, 7%. Mm-hmm. How do people in your generation believe that they are going to be able to find the American dream?
I mean, yeah, I think a lot of folks have concluded that that's not what that's going to look like, you know, and there's not necessarily a feasible way towards home ownership for many, many people because of conditions being as they are, created as they have been. And that is, you know, the primary tool of building generational wealth and
it is
and prosperity. And so if your parents didn't own their house, I don't know what the numbers are on how likely it is that one would be able to.
Well, young people your age, what do they see as, or in your generation, what do they see as the American dream in their future?
I think the American dream is having like decently affordable rent, not even affordable by like the federal standard, which is 30% of your income, but you know, decently affordable rent, plants and a dog. That's my assertion. You know, yard. I don't know if we're gonna get a yard. You know, I don't know. And I think that impacts long-term planning in a big way, because if you can't see your way there, how are you gonna get there?
So, is that all over the country, or is that specifically here in Portland?
It might be a little more specific to cities because they are so much more expensive than the cost of living elsewhere. But the conditions of living outside of urban centers are more and more undesirable for people.
In what way?
Politically.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I know that there's, you know, politically or being close to stuff, cultural center, you know, that there's reasons that people enjoy living in cities and would like to be able to affordably live in a city, which is not an unheard of thing. Like, it's not necessarily the case that cities have to be hyper expensive, you know?
No, they shouldn't be.
They shouldn't be.
It's called rent control.
Yeah, Sure. Oh, I,
we need what's to advocate that, for rent control.
I'm too young. What's rent control?
Right. It's something the people in Portland need to learn about fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Chloe Udaly, when she was on the council, throwback. She was trying to have something of a rent control in place. Yeah,
that's a point that Piper McDaniel, who's like a local journalist, would make fairly often when I would interview her, is that, sure, we can like slow the rental rates, but we're never reversing them. We're never making things cheaper than they are now.
Right.
And so, you know, the repercussions that has in terms of us trying to address affordability in housing is nutty.
This has been a fabulous conversation. We have our next show coming on here pretty quick. I am going to give you back your time. I do appreciate you sitting with me.
Happy to be here, Sherry. What an honor.
Thank
you. To be here on PDX Progressive.
Yes. And there is no gap this Friday.
No gap this Friday. I'll probably post it on our Instagram, but yes, we'll be back next week.
Yes, we will be back next week. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thankful for you, Sherry.
Thankful for you, ma'am. I'm going to play some music now.
All right. Take us home.
Enjoy.
Dr. Demento, I am here in a land of happy, freaky people. KBOO Portland.
Want to be in the know for all things Ghost of Hollywood? Check out our website at theghostofhollywood.com for all the newest episodes and updates.
And don't forget to listen every other Friday live on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. If you're not local, you can also find us live on KBOO.FM. And while you're there, please consider donating to Portland's very own listener-powered radio.
Hey, 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 KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM here in Portland, Oregon, 100, 104.3 FM, Corvallis, Philomath, Albany. Hello to you. Hello to everyone in Hood River, Columbia Gorge, and 91.9 FM, and World.